Hello and welcome to Generation Goat. I am E. Christopher Clark. With
And
me, as always, is John Martin, who just gave me a very wonderful countdown via the video part of this conversation, which all of you can't see.
I do what I can. It was a little homage to Wayne's World.
Yes, there you go. So, you know, the first order of business here on episode 29 of Generation
episode
29.1.
29.1.
is that there actually was a 29th episode that we recorded last week. So we were on our, was that, that was going to be the fourth week in a row, right?
Well, it was close. It was like 2 days off.
Yeah. So, but it was pretty close. It was going to be the fourth week in a row. And, unfortunately our equipment decided to only record my side of the conversation. And then for a few days, we actually toyed with the idea of releasing this completely absurd episode where I was just talking to myself, but I think we've opted against that.
I think perhaps we could still, possibly at some point in the future. I mean, like an April Fool's episode or something.
There you go. I mean, we've got April Fool's coming up. I mean, that would be episode 30, whatever. Because, you know, so this is 29. We're coming up on 30,
yep.
On officially being old.
Also and, for the 90s.
Yes. Exactly. Now that song's in my head. That's been happening to me a lot today. Earlier in the day on Facebook, somebody said to me, you know, you're cooler than cool. And I immediately got Outkast stuck in my head for
that. Then I was kind of like, do I really want to go today? I don't know. That could be really embarrassing.
What, because of Outkast?
Well, you know.
When I think Outkast, I think of Mr. Hicks, the esteemed Dandy Hicks, who posted a version of Hey Ya, the Outkast song, with the Charlie Brown characters dancing to it many, many years ago now.
Although, I
and
don't know.
That's what I think of.
Of a dude that has a number in his name that I like.
Mm. Yeah.
But that could take a while, but I honestly, you know, like excluding certain emperors or monarchs.
Yes. Andre 5000, not, yeah. Not exactly a guy that I think.
I don't know. I mean, it's tough. Are there any dudes with numbers in their names that we can?
Johnny Number Five is a robot. I mean.
Yeah, but you know what? After seeing Short Circuit 2, I wanted that little bastard to die.
Yeah, true, true that. I don't know. I'm hard pressed to think of anybody with a number in their name.
In our unreleased episode,
yes,
we touched on many things. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure we had solved cancer and world hunger, but
I know. Well, you had solved them, and the reason we're not releasing the podcast is because those things are now lost to digital history because they didn't get recorded.
Also,
so you solved those things, but not me.
Patent pending, also actually.
Patent pending, so, exactly.
But what we were talking about your play, which we went to see.
We did,
which was quite good.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So An Evening of Apocalyptic Theater is now entering its
final week,
third and final weekend. We went on opening night.
Opening night, which was sold out.
It was, yeah. And most of the Friday and Saturdays have been sold out. I think the Sundays have done a little bit less in terms of volume. But it was a really good show. I directed one and wrote another. And they were back to back. And it was neat because all of my stress regarding the evening was all packed into 20 minutes there towards the middle and middle to the end, and the rest of it I just got to enjoy. But I think the best part, I mean, you and I talked about this last time, the best part were performances by Jamie Bradley and Brian Kelly, who were in two plays together, one of which was called So Long, which involved alien abduction and Hot Pockets, and the other one...
Sorry to cut you off there. Mm. What you are about to hear is an abomination against God and all the saints.
Mm.
Any moment now, here comes an ice cream truck. Do you hear it?
I hear it.
Yeah. It's fucking March.
Right? It's March. It's like 80 degrees outside, though.
Yeah, but you know what, people... Easter does not begin the day after Valentine's Day. Christmas doesn't start in July, and ice cream trucks, they don't come around in March in Massachusetts.
No, they should not. They should not generally. The ice cream stand in my town opened the other day.
Yeah, the really irritating thing is this thing came around the other day when it was only like 60. And I was like, God damn it, ice cream truck, that is so stupid. And then like 2 minutes later, I was like, I wonder if Sully's is open.
So the ice cream stand not does not have the same rules applied to it as the ice cream truck.
Well, because the ice cream stand doesn't come to your house and like play stupid songs.
Don't I know it? I wrote a whole short story about how annoying the ice cream truck is. One of the better ones in that second collection, I think, if I may say so myself. And I just did.
Ice cream truck in high school, actually, this is a total digression, and I definitely shouldn't name names, but a certain circle of people that I knew who were friends with someone that I knew well. Yeah, I shouldn't even give too many clues. They often referred to the ice cream man coming to their house, and for like 2 years, I was like, "What is that all about?" And then it turned out the ice cream man was heroin. I was kind of bummed out after that. So.
Yeah, that is a bummer. I mean, I have nothing against the ice cream truck on principle when it comes to
Wait,
Fourth
are
of
we talking
July.
about heroin or ice cream?
Take your pick. When it comes to 4th of July or things like that,
Now it's funnier if we're talking about heroin.
it is. <isn't it? laughs> I have nothing
Or at
but
picnics or like kids' birthday parties.
I have nothing but like profound respect for the ice cream man. Do I have to read Hamlet today?
Why are you
No.
reading Hamlet today?
We talked about Hamlet in class today in my in one of the classes I both of the classes I taught today and the class I'm teaching tonight we'll be talking about it as well.
And you didn't invite me?
I didn't, I'm sorry.
Damn it.
Because you could have commented on what an idiot I am when it comes to talking about Hamlet.
Yeah.
I think there are some students in my class who are sitting there and just thinking, this guy has no idea what I'm talking about, including two girls in my class who went to Chelmsford High like we did, and who probably paid much more. I was going to say had a better teacher, but I had a pretty good teacher. I was going to say who probably paid much more attention to their teacher than I did in high school. Yeah.
Well, anyway, going back to Brian and Jamie.
Yes, Brian and Jamie. So Brian and Jamie were in So Long, a tribute, which involves aliens and Hot Pockets. And they were also in Hardscrabble, which is written by Bran and Greta, one of the co-hosts of our rival podcast, the Waysiders. So Jamie and Brian played off together so well that that was, I mean, we noted it. Lots of people online noted it. It was a highlight of the reviews that came out about
That's true.
the show. They were amazing together. And now this weekend, I'm going to go back and see it on the final weekend. But Jamie's not going to be in the two roles that he plays.
That's just wrong.
It. I mean, and I know that he's being replaced by very able actors, but he just so owned that part, those parts, that I have a hard time imagining someone else doing it.
What a bummer, man. Maybe I don't want to go again.
I mean, I think people should go if people are hearing this and they're thinking about it. I know there are at least a couple people who listen to this podcast who haven't gone, who may be in the have the option of going. I still think it's going to be great. Jamie's not in either one of the ones I did, and you know, I think both the ones I was involved with were pretty good.
Yeah. Wait. What?
Thanks, man.
Problem.
No, yeah, the opening night experience was really interesting because the one I directed came first, and the guy who wrote it was sitting right next to me.
Yes, good laugher that was.
Yeah.
Very,
Yes.
very generous laugher. Laughs at everything.
Yes, James Patrick Kelly, the science fiction writer, laughed quite a bit. Had a
A
great
lot.
time. I
Very
saw him the
confident.
next night. He laughed just as much the second night. His response to the play he wrote that I directed was very, very kind, and he thanked me for it during the scene change. And then my play started. And my play, each time I've seen it, at the middle time I saw it, which was the Saturday night of opening weekend, was probably the best time. both the opening night performance and then the second time I saw it, which was last Friday, it went over real bad. At least to a part of the audience who was very, very offended, I think. That's the best guess I have, because
stop bringing your wife.
The third performance in particular, people groaned at the opening joke. Like, they, not just they groaned and were like, oh, that sort of disgusted groan, which made me kind of proud.
It's kind of what you were going for.
It was what I was going for. But then once you got past the opening groan, my hope had been that people would start laughing at all of the other jokes, and a few did. But that second Friday night crowd was not as kind as the other ones.
You hear that, audience? Shape up.
Yeah, I mean, come on, man. Grow a pair of senses of humor. I don't know.
Next week, maybe the quality of the writing is the problem.
Thanks.
I'm just going out on a limb now.
Moving on.
Students of Chris's class, leave. Leave now. Beat the traffic.
They should. They really should. If it wasn't for a nap I got to take this afternoon, I would be completely useless by this point in the day. This is the first week after spring break. Is it for you too?
When was their spring break? Yeah, last week. I teach online, so it's kind of like, yes, they were away, but I'm still in my pajamas either way.
Well, so last week was spring break, and now getting back to the grind of both spring break plus working at the salt mine.
Yeah.
I'm just exhausted. And then Stephanie, my wife's been taking a class, and so she's been she had a paper due and a presentation due, and so I was watching the kids a lot more in my free time. That's exhausted, man.
It's a lot of work. But you got through your kids' 3 birthday parties.
I did, yes. 3 of them. And, you know, you wouldn't think a 6-year-old needs 3 birthday parties.
No.
But, and originally she wasn't supposed to get 3 birthday parties. I think last year after her 5th birthday, we actually talked about having a combined party for both her and her sister. And yet somehow that has turned into a grand total of 5 parties between the two of them.
It's too far apart. If I were a kid and my birthday were anything more than like 12 hours away from my sister or brother, I would kill my parents. My birthday.
Yeah.
It's like 3. Parents would be like, I bought you both this toy to play with. And then you'd be like, fuck you. I'm going to grow up and become a stripper.
Oh, God. Please don't make me think about that. I don't. After all the strippers that I've written about and the hijinks they've gotten into, I don't need to. Although I suppose that would be just desserts.
Although maybe you could use that to your advantage, right? Because kids never like the stuff that their parents like. So maybe you should just go full tilt and like have strippers over the house and like get buy lots
there
of
you
porn.
Go.
And if you don't get your kids taken away from you, then chances are they'll go completely the other way and be really straight-laced and good.
There you go. There's a strip club right down the street from my house. If I just invited all the performers over for lunch one day with the girls, you know.
Yeah.
That'd set them straight.
Sure.
You know, there was the HBO program Scared Straight, right, where they brought in the kids to meet the criminals or something. Like, just bring in the kids to meet the strippers and they'll learn.
Were you there in – I remember in high school there was a day where we got brought down to the gym and they had, like, the Billerica sheriff guy come to school with a bunch of convicts.
I don't think I was there for that. I feel like that was the sort of thing I always heard about on TV, but I was never present.
Maybe
for.
It was like a micro assembly for those of us who were deemed troublemakers. But I feel like there were a lot of people there. I feel like there were like a few hundred people.
Yeah. Well, I think there were 2 years where you were still at school and I wasn't. So, that's, I mean, it could have been the last two.
But yeah, it was very awkward. They had these guys and they were just like.
Also, I missed a lot of. I was going to say, also, I missed a lot of school because I was chasing the ice cream truck. You know, so
that's rough. Yeah. No, I just remember them yelling at us a lot and us going, well, if we're going to commit crimes, we're going to do it better than you guys because you all suck. So leave us alone. It was very uncomfortable.
Well, lots of things about high school were, but lots of those assemblies were. That's
Oh, God. Jesus. Were you there for the testicular cancer one?
I don't recall that one. I think I blacked out a lot of high school. But
they took all the women in school and brought them to like one of the cafeterias. I gather they were taught how to give themselves breast exams.
Ah.
For ours, they had like the head sports guy and his friend who had lost one of his testicles. And
gotcha.
Like, to us about that.
I must have been chasing the ice cream truck a whole hell of a lot because I don't remember any of these. The one I do remember was from like fourth grade when the girls all got shunted off to one room to talk about periods and all of that stuff. And then the boys, I forget what they actually showed us. I mean, I think that the whole idea was sex education, but there was nothing even vaguely educational in it because I went on for years having no clue what the hell happened during sex, and my wife would probably tell you I still have no clue, but
well, anyway, moving swiftly on. Yeah, do you think they started that thing in fourth grade with a bunch of lame jokes that went like right over the kids' heads?
I think
as you know, at our school we have 7 periods in the day, but guess what? You're gonna get 1 extra.
That is a scene waiting to be written. Actually, that should be a line delivered by the female character in our script, I think.
Yes.
She should be recounting that particular instance from elementary school.
You thought block scheduling was confusing. Only once a month for a week do we have this other period. It's like some perverted daylight savings time. Anyway. See, Waysiders, we went there.
We did. I think RT is in the middle of a trip back from the Midwest to here, and then eventually he'll be heading back the other direction. I wonder if he'll happen to load up Generation Goat for the drive home. The thing I do remember about high school in terms of not assemblies quite, but we had a principal the last 2 years that I was there, or the last year I was there, I don't know, who had a habit of making announcements throughout the day.
Yes. Sixth period, Herbie.
Yeah, like, what was up? Because I was going through old copies of The Voice, which was our school newspaper,
sure.
And we made lots of jokes about that in there. I made way too many jokes for someone who was ostensibly the news editor. I was doing a lot more humor.
High school newspaper.
Yeah. My father brought home, who drives a bus for the high school system, right, or for the whole public school system, brought home a copy of The Voice someone had left on the bus, and it looks like an actual newspaper now. I tossed it out. Like, I was just like, no. It's
damn kids in their desktop publishing.
It's supposed to look like a lame, stapled together booklet that you could have assembled yourself in, on your PC in like 1994. It's never supposed to have gotten any further than that. It just,
What can you do, man?
I don't know. Anything. So yeah, I remember lots of Herbies. I don't remember the content of any of them.
They were always odd announcements. It was always for people who aren't familiar with our high school. And I mean, really seriously, do your homework. we had 7 periods in the day, but every day without fail during sixth period, just in the middle of sixth period, Herbie would get on the loudspeaker and just muse about things. Sometimes he would be like, we have this event coming up. But half the time he'd be like, some people have reported that there is a problem with textbooks.
Mm. Hey, and hold on a second.
Bell.
And then there was the one time where he said, hold on a second, kids. I got to go see about an ice cream truck. Oh,
yeah, it was very weird.
Yes.
Although the man who replaced him didn't work out so well either.
No, it did not. The man who replaced him was my journalism teacher back in high school. Yeah.
And
maybe, did I ever have him for English? I don't think I did.
Let's just put it this way. He's not allowed around education anymore.
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, our town, lots of fun things.
Oh, suburbia. Suburbia, I think, is always more dysfunctional than everywhere else.
Mm.
I'm not sure why, but...
I think it's why so many... why suburbia comes up as a topic, as a backdrop for so much great narrative, whether it's films, whether it's stage plays like... it's called Suburbia by... I forget the guy's name. It'll come to me eventually. and why I focus so much on suburbia, because, and we were talking about it in, gosh, where was I talking it with people about? We're talking about it in class on Monday. We were talking about the effect of setting a movie like Wonder Boys, or a book like Wonder Boys, mm-hmm. by the movie by what's his ass, and the book by Michael Chabon. And the effect of setting it in sort of a suburban area of Pittsburgh, or just in setting it in a town like that, where you've got an urban area that you can get access to, a really suburban area, a really sort of high class suburban area. You've got all this stuff, and that's what's great about suburban stories, is that you can get gritty. You can take people who should never be exposed to gritty and expose them to gritty, and it just
Sorry, the visual communication was, Chris, your hand is over your mic.
Oh. I did not notice that. And that's I'm real quick on the uptake. Yeah. I thought you were just doing jazz hands.
Yeah, that's me. Everybody knows I'm a sunny kind of guy. That's the thing I would do.
You know, speaking of jazz hands, we talked about, you know, Jamie Bradley not being part of Evening of Apocalyptic Theater.
Don't bother going, folks.
This weekend. No, go. Come on, support us. It's all for charity.
Yeah.
The reason Jamie's not doing it is he is actually going to be in a Manchester production of Chicago, doing the husband, John C. Reilly's character from the film adaptation they did recently. Why I can't remember. Amos, right? Is it Amos? I think it's Amos.
Sure.
Anyway, at any rate, I mean, he's a fantastic actor, Jamie is, and a great singer. So I think I'm going to go up and see that, considering Manchester is 15 minutes from my house.
Right.
And so, you know, good on him for going out and getting a big gig like that. You know, Apocalyptic Theater will make do. I know.
Maybe you could get someone of equal stature, like Ken, to go do
that was the comment we made back and forth to each other, was in this screenplay or stage play that we've been writing, there is a character based on our old friend Ken Mills, and we had joked about one of us playing it because we thought it was going to be a minor role, and then we went and saw this Evening of Apocalyptic Theater and saw Jamie and said, there's an actually funny version of Ken.
He doesn't know it yet. We haven't talked to him yet, but we have to build the play around him now.
We do. I mean, that was that impactful of a performance.
Yeah. He doesn't know yet, but there was someone in the audience who was also very much like our old friend Ken.
Yes.
Which I'm not sure how much we can say, but we should find a way of explaining this to people at some point.
Yes, somebody there who was very, very excitable and very much of the
which is worth saying.
No filter.
It's an endearing quality of Ken's. It's not that we're putting him down.
Yeah, no. He's very excitable, very little filter, and kind of manic one moment, and very kind of not depressed. I mean, you know, we had friends back in the day who would call me manic depressive boy, and I think I certainly could get there, but
I don't know what you're talking about. Look at my iPad.
But I feel like at least in my experience with hanging out with other friends of ours like Ken, you know, Ken could get really, really manic and then, you know, get really, really low really fast. And I guess I can do that. I don't know.
Well, I think your problem, and it's still your problem, as we discovered the night that we went to see your show, is that you're very much like a lot of people I know who are comedians who, you know, enjoy making people laugh and enjoy doing that, but then I have this myself to some extent. As soon as you feel happy and full of laughter, you get very like, wait, are they laughing with me or at me or am I being ridiculous? Oh no. And they're like, I've talked to other comedians, even some who, you know, tour and do it professionally. And like, there's an inherent insecurity to being publicly happy in a fashion, which is strange and clearly means that there's something wrong with us. I'm going to go ahead and blame your parents for both
Okay,
things.
sure.
But it's true, though.
Mm.
Which is why I think so often Generation Get episodes are basically our therapy.
Yeah, I think there's an element of truth to that. I think you're absolutely right that part of if I overanalyze in a good way, if I analyze why I overanalyze, I think
yes.
part of that comes from you explained it. I feel like I'm just going to end up re-explaining.
I think for me, it's like the Irish thing. Like I feel like. On some like ancestral level, like you feel like you really know people when things are sad and the chips are down, and when people are happy and smiling and laughing, it's really hard to know if they're being genuine.
Yeah,
I think
well,
it's sort of like ancestral moodiness, and
I think it's also the literature scholars in us because you know most good literature, whether and most good narrative, regardless of whether you're talking. On the page, on the stage, whatever, involves heartbreak of some sort or trial and tribulation of some sort. And
Charlie Brown and the Football Man.
Exactly, man. Eeyore and his tail. I mean, like, just even the children's stuff that it resonates most with us over the years is, you know, is stuff that involves sadness. I mean, there's a reason that that Puff is such a like important song to you and to me. Once I heard you explain why it was important, because I think
said,
when I was a kid, I didn't know.
That said, Watership Down still fucking cruel. There is no excuse for Watership Down.
I have not had to experience it. So I of course I'm vaguely aware, but I have not
do
had
it
to
someday.
Experience.
But don't do it with your kids.
Yeah,
like there's bunnies and like rivers of blood and like. This is not a kid's movie.
Yeah, no, I don't think I will. But, you know, honestly, in terms of like getting stuff off our chest, therapy and whatever, like, my kid, Kaylee, just last night had a. She's got some, already at six, has some demons, some like really weird stuff that's going on, and I don't quite know how to deal with it. Last night, she. We were watching home movies. When I'm home watching them on Tuesday nights because Stephanie's got class, I don't usually want to watch a movie with them because we're not going to have enough time. So I'll throw on whatever we've got that's like 5 minutes long. So either movie trailers or old home movies or whatever. And so I'm sitting there and I'm watching old home movies with her. And the person that she had the reaction to was not in the movie. I don't know what caused it. But all of a sudden she started weeping about Stephanie's dad, who she didn't know except as a baby. Stephanie's dad died when Kaylee was 6 months old, not even 6 months old. And she, I'm not sure where the attachment comes from necessarily or why the reaction happens, but man, it scares me because she's this is the second or third time it's happened. And
I think I'm it's pretty sure. normal. I mean, I think about that age, you know, it started really occurring to me that there was the possibility in the world that people I knew could just go away forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I went to my first funeral when I was like 4.5, 5, I think.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really until like I got to school and met lots and lots of more kids who all had like that person in their family that I didn't.
Right.
And it was kind of like, oh, that could happen to me.
Yeah.
Shit. And then you do. You get really anxious about it, you know, because,
yeah.
I mean, it's a really big idea, and it takes, I think, a lot of our lives. I don't think anybody ever really comes to terms with death,
yeah.
But I think that, like, you know, you reach a more calm place about it, at least until
right.
you're old.
yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it takes a while. I mean, she's at about that age where kids start to figure out, like, oh, so, like, my dad could just go away.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely see that as the motivation. It's just so, the focus is so strongly on her grandfather, who she didn't really know.
She probably had a lot more kids with grandparents recently.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really
tough,
weird.
Because there's not a lot you can say, you know,
yeah.
other than like try to reassure them that nobody's going anywhere right now and it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough.
Yeah.
I don't know
you know, yeah, I mean, I and it was an interesting parenting moment because I felt myself, you know, as I do in almost every aspect of my life, making decisions and then overanalyzing those decisions at the same time I was making them. So I found myself, as I was trying to redirect her attention towards having dinner, questioning whether I was doing the right thing by redirecting versus actually talking to her about it. And then eventually I did talk to her a little bit about it, but I didn't want her to keep crying. I didn't want her to keep dwelling on it.
It's tough. And I mean, there's only so much you can say. Yeah. I mean, I would probably do the same thing you do. I mean, I would probably say something like, well, is it something you want to talk about?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I asked her, did she want to look at some pictures of him or look at, because we weren't, that we, I think we were watching a happy little video about going to the White Mountains or something, and whatever it was, something set her off. So, I mean, eventually, you know, we were all good. We went upstairs, got ready for bed, and sang along with a terrible pop song on YouTube, and which she likes to do, like her dad, and yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, of all the stuff you should worry about with your parenting, there, right there. That last
the
bit.
The terrible pop songs.
That's the one. You found it right there.
See, I'm not sure how to introduce. I've introduced her to a couple of strange things, but most of the things she gravitates towards are pop songs. She loves one of the songs off of Amanda Palmer's side project, what the hell is that one called? Evelyn Evelyn. There's a song called Elephant Elephant, I think because it's about an elephant, but. The whole thing makes me smile that she loves an Amanda Palmer song already at six. You know, that fits in nicely with how much she likes not Miley Cyrus, Selena Gomez. And Selena Gomez is from this Wizards of Waverly Place show that she keeps watching on Netflix over and over and over again. But it's interesting to watch her watch it because she's becoming a student. She becomes a student of things in this really weird. She will watch the same episode over and over again, and sort of. It seems like she's getting something out of it. She watches. She is a performer, so she will study the way that people perform in the show. Movie trailers. She does similar things. There's the movie trailer for the animated adaptation of The Lorax, which we've seen a whole bunch, and she has perfected her Danny DeVito impression because there's a line in that where Danny DeVito says, "I'll go right up your nose," and Kaylee just can mimic
of all
it.
The things you don't want your kid to take to, you know?
Yeah, Danny DeVito.
I couldn't even think Christopher Walken. That would be funny.
Yeah.
Bill Shatner. That would be hilarious coming out of a six-year-old. Oh, Danny DeVito.
Oh, yes. Danny, I don't know. I think there are probably worse people she could gravitate
toward.
That's
true.
I mean, and the thing is, she has no idea it's Danny.
Anyway.
She has no idea it's Danny DeVito. She knows it's the Lorax. She looks at him and, you know,
see what happens if you show her a picture of Danny DeVito and be like, this is the Lorax.
And she's like, ah!
Yeah. See if she ever goes back to that movie. I want to know. Apparently that movie is corrupting America's children or something. Some other ridiculous thing that conservatives are up in arms about.
Probably.
It
because
teaches kids that environmentalism is good. And that's...
Yeah, well, that's been the issue against the book the whole time. So I'm actually glad that the movie can manage to rile their, you know, ruffle their feathers in the same way.
People.
I don't know. It's...
And the other day, the genius Rick Santorum was campaigning in Illinois, and he said, "I don't care about the economy. I don't care what the unemployment rate is in this country. Mm. You shouldn't either. This is about big issues.
Like pornography.
What's the single issue that people always care about in an election? The economy.
The economy. That's it.
The one thing they care about.
That's all anybody... I mean, it's always about the economy. It's always about the economy. When it's good, when it's bad.
Yeah.
That's...
When it's good, how long is it going to be good? When it's bad, when are you going to fix it?
Right.
You know? Wow. Just
that.
Wow.
That and invading people's private lives, at least if you're a conservative.
So I don't know. I just, yeah. The Lorax. Really? That's a campaign issue? Okay.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah.
It's proof positive that we live in a ridiculous country.
We do. It. Yeah, don't even get me started on health insurance, which has been the cause of a lot of tears this week. I was listening to a podcast. called Build and Analyze, which is on the 5x5 network. And it's between Dan Benjamin, who runs that network, and the co-host is Marco Arment, who develops Instapaper, which is a great iOS app for, how did he put it? He put it really brilliantly. For time, no, not time sharing, time syncing, time shifting your reading. And I've read so much more long form stuff on my devices over the last week since I bought Instapaper. Anyway,
I
so
used to read it later, but same principle, yeah.
yeah, same. It's Instapaper, read it later. Readability, I think, is a new one that just came out. Same concept. And so Marco and Dan got to talking about health insurance and how each of them, as essentially sole proprietors, do it, and just the realities of that are crazy.
You should move back to Texas.
Yeah, I know. I know. Every year when I have to fill out my non-resident Massachusetts tax return, I think, oh, am I going to have to fill out the HC form? Like, no, I don't. But it'd be nice if I had, state health insurance to purchase at a reasonable price. I tell you, after listening to that conversation between Marco and Dan, and I listen to a lot of these things where people talk about freelancing and talk about going out on their own and making money in a sort of what we would consider a kind of weird way for those of us who have grown up with parents who have jobs and expecting that we're supposed to go out and get jobs. Like, if it wasn't for the health insurance, if it wasn't for my family, I think I would be perfectly content living in a one room complete shack, and working on my writing and maybe having a part-time job at the salt mine to pay the bills. But the reality is, like, my kids need health insurance, and I'm in this precarious situation. And man, I just,
I hear you.
it's it would be nice if that sort of plan that's there in Massachusetts even would be the, and I don't know much about politics, I shouldn't talk about them, but at least something like that, where it was available even at an unreasonable rate for me to go as an individual citizen and purchase health insurance. That wouldn't bankrupt me.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of sides to it, obviously, and this is Generation Goat, so we probably shouldn't go on. I mean, a lot of the problems, are that fundamentally speaking, we're the only country in the industrialized world that doesn't view healthcare as a right. I mean, we're also one of those countries that doesn't view education as a right either, higher education, right? Almost every other industrialized country has some sort of program for subsidizing college. We don't. Collectively, students in this country will owe about $1 trillion this coming fiscal year, and I mean that's a huge time bomb. It dwarfs the housing thing, if it goes. But so there's that. There's the idea that we don't see it as a right, but like the way people get healthcare has really changed. Like it used to be that you got a decent job and your employer took care of it. Now you get a decent job, your employer takes care of part of it. And, a lot of that has to do with the costs going up, and the costs going up is a function of people suing more and more and more for, malpractice, which may or may not be taking place. But because insurance costs go up for the doctors, your costs go up. And then, we also have all kinds of other weird things too. Like, a lot of medicines in this country that treat kind of key problems like cancer or things that reduce the risk of heart attack or stroke or whatnot, they're subsidized by national health infrastructure. The government takes a portion of money and says, develop these drugs. And this is tax funded, right? Now, in Britain, if something like that is tax funded, the government is then able to say, okay, but you can't sell it back to us at whatever price you want. You have to sell it at a price that people can afford because we helped pay for it. In this country, not only are they allowed to set their own price, but they can patent it and they can keep generics off the market for 5 to 7 years. I mean, a lot of the problems with healthcare in this country aren't so much that people don't want it, because the whole debate was going on in 2008. In 2009, you saw that even the average rank and file Republican was like, well, I think there should be healthcare. But, it's their political holdups. Yeah, I don't know. And I mean, I've lived in one of these countries, you know? I spent a lot of time in the UK and I didn't suffer.
Right.
I didn't go to the doctor and have them say, well, you know, you look healthy, so we're not going to look at you. Come back in 20 years and we'll check on you. You know, they ordered tests and they did things. I had one doctor who was a jerk, but he was a jerk. He wasn't about like, oh, we're rationing the healthcare.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, in some ways, it's really glad that I have the Massachusetts stuff right now because it doesn't cost me that much.
And,
you know, I have a pretty good line on a job in Canada. I feel for you, man. I know exactly what you're going through. I mean, it's awful. And
But I mean, on the same token, aside from the benefits part of it, and aside from my tendency to take on too many things, it's like a really brilliant life to be leading. You know, I'm not doing anything that I despise doing, and there have been years in my life where that's exactly what I've been. I've been toiling. There have been years in my life where I was toiling away at jobs I hated, and yes, I had benefits, but the day-to-day life was terrible. And so right now, the only real problem aside from not having benefits is that I've taken on too much. And every year I always say to myself, or every semester I say, I'm not going to do it next time, and somehow I find a way to do it. But just even listening to that podcast and hearing the crazy way that Marco kept his costs down, he hired his wife as an employee because it was cheaper for him to get a company plan than it for two people, and all the associated fees with now having an employee, than it was for him to go out and get health insurance on his own. The whole podcast is generally okay, especially if you like development things. But when they get into Q&A like that, and they talk about life as either sole proprietors or small businesses, it's crazy.
But you know, examples like that are why anybody who wants to change the system are socialist anarchists who are out to destroy everything we love and hold dear.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, this is probably far too political for Generation Gator. my general feeling is that if it is your opinion, you hypothetical, if it is your considered opinion that people should have to choose between paying the rent, paying their bills, or paying for their sick children,
right?
You're an asshole.
I'm with you. I mean, I of course I'm biased, but
all the stuff that our country spends money on, the trillions of dollars on defense, you know, the huge domestic spying programs, all the crap we spend money on, we can't scrape together the change to fix healthcare.
Nope.
Okay. Yeah. That's all I'm going to say. Let's see.
Moving on. I have been listening to a lot of podcasts on that network, and what's great about them is that the sort of practical – the one that I really like listening to is Back to Work, which is Dan Benjamin and Merlin Mann. And they – in terms of a model for podcasts, it's pretty interesting because they will go off on a complete tangent for the first two-thirds of the episode, and then the last third of the episode will be complete gold. And the fact that they allow themselves to just sort of be conversational and go in weird places, you know, one week they're talking about their computers, another week they're talking about their kids. And then eventually you get to that last third and there's genius in there about how to do better work, how to treat yourself better, how to go off on less tangents and things like that.
So what you're saying is we suck on multiple levels.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
But we knew that. One thing that got lost, actually, thinking about our podcast from the last episode. was somebody recognized me.
Oh, yeah.
We were sitting next to your friend Maggie, and she was like, oh, are you that guy from Generation Goat? And I was like, yeah, I'm sorry, you listen to Generation Goat? And she was like, no, but like, how do you know I'm – okay. cool.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Weird.
The word is getting out there, I think. And I do think the regularity of it helped, because the other thing that happened that I think got lost in last week's shuffle was that somebody else came out and said that they'd listened to their first episode. That was a college friend of mine, Suzanne, had listened to her first episode. And so I think the fact that it's been coming out regularly has encouraged people who were otherwise just kind of like, oh, I'll wait till the next time I hear from them, like 2 months from now, and then I'll listen to it. And then they'd forget. They're coming around and they're listening to it. So, you know, the word is certainly getting out there. I saw on RT launched a new website this week or late last week. And he's got us linked on his, I don't know if it's people he likes or sites that he likes. Got both you and me, and mentions, you know, the Great Generation Goat podcast. So, hello to all of you who might have been following through oneWordHeadline.com.
Now, how do you feel about RT?
So, I mean, I think the word gets out there, and yeah. So, what else got lost in
well,
last week?
Your friend John Herman is going into space, apparently.
he is one of five finalists now.
Out of 50,000?
Yeah, it's nuts. So I think it was, how did it work? It was something like there were 50,000 people who entered, and then of that, 1,000 people were randomly selected to create videos, and then of that 1,000, 20 were selected to be voted on, and then over the last month or so, on Facebook, you've been able to vote the top 20, and I think they weren't even going to announce who the top five were until sometime next month. But John pointed out it was very easy to like manipulate whatever web page to see who had the most votes. So now it's pretty public that he's among the top five that might go into space as part of a celebration of the anniversary of the Space Needle out in Seattle. It's pretty crazy. I mean,
I had a very cynical dream about that, where he was like working the Krista McAuliffe connection real hard because he's from New Hampshire.
Yes.
I hope he's not. I'm sure he's not.
John, I'm sure he's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I had a paranoid vision of that, of like school teachers from New Hampshire should not go into space. The other side of that.
One doesn't make a rule.
Right, no. But I had a sudden wondering in thinking about that, and I have not Googled it, thinking that the 2006, whatever the other crash was in the 2000s.
That was my birthday, and it was 2004.
2004. I had this inkling that there was another school teacher on that flight who, and I think I'm wrong, but in my brain I was thinking there was a school teacher on that craft as well, who had been inspired by Krista McAuliffe. Maybe I'm not wrong about that. Maybe I'm wrong about thinking that one was also from New Hampshire. But
so
whatever the case.
What you're saying is that it's not really the space program, but Krista McAuliffe that's cursed?
I don't know. Or the state of New Hampshire.
Actually, it's 2003, my bad.
2003, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Because I was in Oxford that year.
I remember, and I was... I think I had sent you a message in the morning, and then we went out to eat in Drum Hill. For whatever reason, we were down in Drum Hill at the time, Stephanie and I, and at the Bickfords that was there, and that's when we heard about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a weird morning.
There was a Clark on board.
There was a what? A Clark?
A Laurel Clark.
Okay. All right. I'm not going to space.
No, but John should.
John should. Yeah, it would be very, very cool, because the dude is really afraid of heights to begin with, and his video, which
it's one way to get over it.
Yeah, his video is very heartfelt. I mean, the idea of like, and I've certainly felt this too as a dad, like watching your kid and seeing the way that your kid looks at the world, and hoping to not crush their hopes and dreams too early. Is always sort of the goal of any parent, but being able to raise their hopes and dreams, being like, hey, look, Dad went to space by entering his email address into a form, would be a pretty cool thing to do for...
We should give him a copy of our podcast on a USB stick and bring it to space.
Bring it to space.
And then we can give it away to RT. This is space, dude.
This has been in space, man.
This is a prelude to our upcoming movie, Space Goats.
Space Space Goats Coast to Coast, our TV show that will follow that up.
That's right. Wow, that's nuts. So anyway, I think that's probably good.
Yeah, I'm sure there were other
politics at this point. Like,
yeah.
Sorry, everybody.
Politics and my daughter's nightmares and
episode 30 will be great.
Yeah, well, we've got plenty. I think we've probably got other material that we lost in the original episode 29. We can come back to for episode 30.
And isn't this really RT's fault anyway?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thanks, RT.
So, okay, this weekend is the last weekend for
the evening of Apocalyptic Theater
in Portsmouth at the Players' Room.
Yes, it's
book tickets early because it sells out.
Yeah, it does. So there,
it's authors. I mean, what?
8 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, 2 in the afternoon on Sunday. I think it's 2.
So yeah, go see it. And apparently there'll be a bald John Herman walking around.
This is true. He shaved his head for charity in the middle of all of this.
So now yeah. He looks like a space monkey.
Now he looks like Dr. Evil a little bit, right?
Nice.
Oh, maybe there's something going
on. Come see the show and maybe see Chris in his salt mining gear.
Yes, maybe.
All right.
It's a fun costume, the salt mining costume, you know, and I get compliments on it from the people who come from across the country to buy salt from us. So
it's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool.
Nice.
Don't knock the salt mining.
That's a goat, I guess.
It's a goat.
Everybody cross your fingers that it recorded.
Yes.
Alright, see you later.
See ya. Shake it like a Polaroid picture. Hey, yeah, shake it like a Polaroid picture. Now all Beyonce's and Lucy Liu's, shake it, and baby dolls, shake it on the floor. Get on the floor. Shake it like a Polaroid picture. Sugar, you know what to do.